What's up, y'all?
All right. So listen, we have a new opportunity so you can be loyal increasingly to the Corner Store Podcast. We have a Patreon account. Tarma, Davian, where can people find us on Patreon?
Patreon.com/cornerstore_pod.
And this is a way where you can support us each and every week. There are, you know, very affordable ways to support the Corner Store. It gives you a multitude of options. You could support the snacks, stop Max from coming out of his pocket every week to, you know, feed people in the Corner Store. And you could also be a part of a live studio broadcast if you wish. There's a lot of things in that Patreon account. Tar, where can people find that one more time?
Patreon.com/cornerstore_pod.
Y'all, please consider becoming a Patreon, a patron of the Corner Store. Thank you for your support. Hey, Tara.
Hey. What's up, Kevin?
Tara Mahadevan. I got to say the whole thing. It doesn't feel right if I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, you could just teach everyone how to say my name.
That is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
That's why I say it every time.
You really are an educator.
Tara, I think you know how excited I am for today's episode.
I'm probably not even going to talk. He's just going to be gushing, fangirling.
I know.
Rarely fangirls.
I'm shook. I don't know if I've been shook in this booth before, but we have a for real legend in the Corner Store today. Someone who, if you know anything about Chicago music, Midwest hip hop, Panic of the Moment is a central figure as a producer, as a DJ, as a beat maker, as an organizer in this culture. Someone who I think put a generation of MCs on and gave us a blueprint and a soundscape to rhyme over. But you know, the man himself is in the building. Panic, thank you, man. Thanks for being in the Corner Store.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for having me here.
I appreciate you, man. We have a few snacks for you, Max. The snack door has secured you some things.
Yes.
You know, first of all, the new plastic bottle of Snapple lemon tea. It's all natural. This is for you.
Thank you.
And then also, Max got you some Gold Emblem cranberry nut trail mix, which is yogurt covered cranberries, dried cranberries.
Yes, I love cranberries.
Okay, good. Thank you, man. Yeah, feel free to enjoy now.
Walnuts are good for your brain, so.
Are they?
Yeah. Oh, that's why they look like a brain.
Ah, yo.
They do look like a brain.
Yo, is that why cabbage is also good for your brain?
You know what? I didn't come up with that. Are you serious? I saw that on social media.
You're going to try to make correlations between.
I will not take credit for that, but they have this thing where they show like nuts and different fruits, and they show like this is like your heart, and they'll show like, I don't know, a strawberry or something like that.
Wow.
And like walnuts was the brain, and it's good for your brain. Right, so
facts.
That's amazing. Wow.
So yeah, but I did not come up with that. I'll never think
that. Okay, we could have given you the credit. Like we wouldn't even know.
Shit, you in my mind.
I mean, he already thinks you're a genius. So
yeah.
And speaking of taking a credit, like me, there were so many people that helped me out and are behind the scenes and even in front of the scenes for like Bowman. You know, people.
Well, because the Moment really is a collective.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
And so for those that don't know, tell us a little about who the Moment is.
Well, it's just a bunch of people that are interested in we lived in Chicago and we just came up together with common goals with music, DJing, throwing shows. So
what was a goal? I mean, beyond just like creating, but like what was the intention?
You know what? It hasn't stopped since the first day that I got into this. It's just having fun, and I love music. And that's it.
So
everything else that's done,
yeah,
is because of the love for music.
Mm.
You know, whether it's throwing a show or like right now I'm learning like graphic design, I learn video and just different things like that, even taking pictures. But it's all because it has to do with the love of the music and art. I love art in general too. So,
well, because even now I see on your IG you're putting up videos of you in the lab.
Yeah, and I'm doing them myself.
Right, including the editing.
I'm shooting and I'm editing.
Which is raw, yeah.
But you know, it's just me too. Like if I stay still, like I get too anxious. So I like learning things and just messing around with things.
And are you, you were telling me last time we saw each other at the winter block party at the Metro, you said you had just moved back to Chicago too. Is that right?
Yeah, like a couple of days before Thanksgiving.
Okay. And so I want to go all the way back. And by the way, Tara, this is going to be like one of 85 episodes. We're going to do a panic. But
it's fine.
Okay, good.
I expected it.
Yeah.
Just like, whatever. You know.
but yeah, where were you?
I was living in Dallas for like 8 years.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, somebody brought up Erykah Badu. Like, I used to walk my dog. It's this, there's like a little river. And she lived right there. So I used to pass by her. She was putting her kale gardening. And I never went up to her because I was
never slid her a B-tape.
She's going to be like, this creep's going to come up to me while I'm gardening. And I was like, oh, no. Right. So I just leave her alone. But it's like, oh, that's Erykah Badu.
But she would love your music, though. That's the thing. I mean, like, because your music is the music that she came up on.
I mean,
that kind of like boom. Bap,
you know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, even like, you know, old music, like, you know.
Yeah. What brought you to Dallas?
My ex was from there.
Okay.
Yeah. Which her family's originally from here, but they moved to Dallas in the 80s.
Okay.
But yeah, they came up. It was weird because my older brother like had a lot of like intertwined with her family. Like,
oh, wow.
it was really creepy. But yeah, it's I lived in Dallas. She was from Dallas, and it was cool. It's just that I could only stay there for too long. Like, my family's here, you know, and I grew up here, and Chicago. So I was going to have this little thing with me.
It's good.
Keeps
to have
dragging
you.
Me back in.
That's right. That's
Al Pacino and Garfarda. You keep bringing me back in.
Well, it's good to have you back. It's good to have you back. But so let's go all the way back, though.
It feels good to be back, too.
Does it?
Feels great. Has it not been that long?
It's been like 8 years.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I was coming here for like a couple of days or a week.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
little different. Things, but being back, it feels great being here, though.
You, how did you, because being a Chicago kid, I don't know how old you are, but the time your music came out, you were some of the first, you know, your golden era Chicago hip hop.
Yeah.
Prior to that moment, Chicago was known for house.
Yeah.
And hip hop wasn't getting a ton of play in the city at all.
Yeah.
So how did you get in to hip hop music?
Wait, what year?
This is, I mean, I remember you
when
early
I,
90s.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I early, figured, early, but. No, it gets older than that.
Yeah.
Right. Early 90s, I was already like, we're in the
scene. He was
scene.
That dude. We're no, okay. He was that dude. And, okay. Yeah.
But when I first got into hip hop, I was like in 83 around-ish, like during the Run DMC era.
Yeah.
Era. And GCI was, and BMX was playing this song called Jam On It and by Nucleus.
Yes.
And it was being in UTFO Roxanne.
Yep.
And that's what got me first, because before that, I was listening to B96, and they were playing, like, Huey Lewis, and I was kind of like into it, like, the 80s, you know, Michael Jackson, all that stuff, but once Run DMC came up, then that was
it.
It's a wrap.
Sucked me in. I know.
It's over.
Yeah.
But I went to Shurs High School, and I would dress hip-hop, and they would call me B-Boy, because there was nobody there. It was just house music. Right. But I was buying house records and learning how to spin that too, though, you know?
Of course.
But hip hop,
which is the story really of Chicago hip hop, is that intersection with house.
Yeah.
I mean, even some of you, I don't know if, did you work at Gramophone or the Pianist?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
I worked at Gramophone because of Pianist.
Right.
Yes.
Because I remember Pianist and you being there, but that was really a space for house vinyl and for house DJs
still
to
is.
Come. Still is.
Yes.
But then I got flyers from y'all for events, for parties.
Yes.
And eventually, you know, the Shy Rock event that you guys would throw.
I have questions.
Yeah, I know. So, but, so, you know, in the 90s.
No, I understand.
It's fair to say, like,
she's like, I'm ready with my questions. I have
questions.
You guys embodied Chicago. You guys were Chicago hip hop music. You couldn't, like, you would be hard pressed to find.
No,
a beat.
I get all that. All right. My question is,
yes,
if you were coming up, you know, in the beginning of like hip hop being like more mainstream, or I guess more youth culture oriented in Chicago, like how did, you know, how were you playing in venues? How were people like accepting the music? You know, did you get a lot of rejection from playing in venues, or did you have to do like house parties?
Well, this is the thing that just recently, probably like the last 10 years, like everything else, whoever was in hip hop was figuring everything out.
Right.
We didn't know
blazing them trails.
You know? Yeah. So the reason we threw a couple shows like just blindly first. And then with our mixtapes and our music started coming out, people that threw shows started hitting us up about shows. There was this guy named Domingo that he's the first guy who brought Wu-Tang here in the city. And we were really cool with him because I was cool with this guy named Aztec. And he brought me to meet everybody from the Shy Rock Nation over there on the Point. So that's how I got into like meeting everybody from the South Side, because of Aztec, which we met at a flea market on Division in Pulaski, which at a house record store. But that's how we met. So he told me about these meetings on the South Side, and I went with him. That's how I met Vakil and Ange and just a bunch of hip hop people.
Wait, you know, so graffiti writers. Where are you from, though?
I'm from here in Chicago.
Oh, but like what?
But as a kid, I grew up on Pilsen, a little village.
Okay.
But then I moved down the North Side.
Okay.
To like Logan Square.
Right, and so. And explain what that Shy Rock Nation was, because this was a major organizing effort to bring people to bring hip hoppers in the city together.
I mean, it was just full of like legendary rappers and graffiti writers and break dancers and whatever, you know.
Right.
Still up to this point, like I take the train from Melrose Park to Uptown and I see all the graffiti writers from Shy Rock Nation, and you know. And I know all the rappers and DJs. A lot of them are still around, you know, in one way or another. So, but yeah, it was just a collective of people, you know.
And a lot of those people, even you just mentioned, of course, you worked with eventually.
Yeah.
When was the transition for you? Well, first of all, how did the moment form?
Okay, like I said, I went to Shur, so I met this guy named Juan and this other guy named Albert. And Albert was a DJ. Juan was just kind of like a manager type of guy. So me and Juan went to that flea market and we met Aztec, and after that we went to the South Side and I met Vakil, and boom, moment.
Right, okay.
That easy.
Yeah.
It wasn't that easy, right. but I said it that quick. Yeah.
And that's that good moment, like underground thing. Like that's when.
See, Vakil's a big comic book, so he came up with everybody's name pretty much.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, he's just a. He's a comic book like nerd even back then.
Yeah.
So how big is the squad?
Now it's probably like four or five people, but it's fluctuated. People have come and gone. Like we've been around for a long time.
Yeah.
So.
And they, I mean, because you guys would do, of course, you would release just instrumental tapes.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that was like just cassette tapes for the masses, very cheap. I knew so many rappers who just would freestyle and write rhymes. But then you also released crew records that put on in the duplicates of MCs. I mean, and not just Chicago rappers, but Slug from Atmosphere, Rhyme. I mean, so many early Midwest pioneers you were able to work with, in part because the Midwest was building a real organic scene that you guys seemed to be in the center of.
Yeah. See, when we met Vakil, we started putting out tapes because tapes was the thing back then. So after that, we started doing mixtapes because Massacre, he was one of our members. He would do these mixtapes, and in there, we would do like little skits, and we would put like Ange or Rubber Room, like EC and Rubber Room. So we did Taste of Chicago, the AC Rubber Room song, on one of those mixtapes. So after that, we started thinking about releasing vinyl. So that's how we graduated to vinyl. Mm. See.
Right, into a whole record company, really, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you guys.
And then since JR, PNS worked at Gramophones, that's how we would, when Atmosphere first started, they would bring their CDs and stuff, and we would buy them for them. So we just got this network and this friendship with them, you know?
Right, and then when they would come through town, often mm-hmm. you guys would be playing on the same bill together.
Yeah,
and that was, I mean, there was a moment where the Midwest was really, and you kind of saw it, in Scribble Jam a little bit, but the collectivity of the Midwest felt that folks here needed to put on for one another.
Yeah.
And you guys were central in that.
Yeah.
So
we were just lucky to be there.
I have a question for Kevin.
Yeah.
So obviously I assume you've read his book, People's History of Chicago.
I gave it to him. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, Molman has a big presence in it. What is it that drew you to them? You know, I mean, you were young, right? When you first started listening to them.
You know, well, one of the things is that you guys were putting out music that sounded like Chicago.
Yeah.
And, you know, there, and just even instrumentally, you know, my favorite producers before I heard y'all were Premier, mm-hmm. Pete Rock, Prince Paul, and they were in a tradition, but were going in a different direction. And this is, you know, this is before I heard RZA. And yeah. So, you know, you guys were also stripping down the beat in some ways and, yeah. and allowing the instrumentation of various samples to really showcase rappers. I think one of the things I loved about their beats is that you also allowed MCs to be an instrument in it,
yeah.
as opposed to like overproduce a track. But then, I mean, you guys would throw, you know, they would throw these incredible shows and parties and jams and get-togethers, and just as much as you were producing music, you were also, you know, spearheading a culture. And I was a young person who was just in the room, you know, and but I felt like I found a home in those spaces, you know. And so that's why, I mean, it's part of the reason why I think in the 90s, you know, for me, and I think for hip hoppers in the city, in the Midwest,
yeah.
it was so important, those spaces, because hip hop was an anomaly then. And in Chicago, mm-hmm. it was even more of an anomaly because of house. And I was also loved house.
Yeah, me too.
But hip hop was what like spoke to my spirit. You yeah. know, it's what drew me out as a man, as an artist. And you guys were in the center of that for so many of us, yeah. you know?
A love letter to Moment.
You know, that's my next. That's my next 85 books. But you guys in that time, of course, moved from mixtape mm-hmm. to making classic Chicago records. Not only on your own, but also, of course, being involved with All Natural and yeah. that's who are some of the folks in that era? Because I think. Oftentimes, what I'm around a lot of young people now, and I tell them, of course, and they know this, that the shoulders that they're standing on, they might not know the names of. Who yeah. are some of the folks from that era that you feel like were some of your favorites to build with, or some of the projects that you had a hand in that you're most proud of?
Did I've done?
Yeah.
Oh, that's easy. Just all the obvious stuff, you know, just working with MC Juice and
Yo.
Ryan Fest and EC and Rubber Room and the list goes on. Cali Agents, just different people, you know, that I was lucky to work with. Yeah.
Juice is he is also a myth, really, at this point.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to be there for his legendary battles, the main ones.
Really?
Know?
So which ones
I went
did you
with
see?
Him to do both of them.
Eminem shit?
Yeah, I went with him.
It Scribble was, Jam 97.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm a nerd, yo.
And when he was battling him, like, there was this little halftime recession, and I went to him, and I'm like, man, you're giving my boy, like, a nice run to it, you know? He's like... it was pretty cool, though, you know? Just
I mean,
being around that kind of stuff, and then atmospheres there with a little wooden table selling their two CDs. It's like... It's crazy, you know.
Was that inspiring? I mean, that the Scribble Jam took place in Cincinnati,
yeah.
An all element festival. Mm-hmm. You know, it had spaces for B boy, B girl battles, graffiti jams.
Raps.
It had a rap battle,
DJ too,
DJ
yeah.
battles. You met, I imagine, you know, that Midwest, mm-hmm. You know, cadre of artists. But also, I mean, that was some of the early days of Rhymesayers.
Just
as of
everybody,
as
a, yeah, there, you know. Just,
yeah, so that must have been inspirational
yeah,
too, to see
yeah.
that entrepreneurial side of things.
When you're going through it, it's like whatever, you know. 10 years, 20 years later, you're like, wow, because everything's going so fast, you don't even have time to think about it.
But now you look back and you're like, those were the good old years, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's why it's just like anybody else that gets older.
But like, what are the years,
back in my days,
though,
you know?
That are like the good old years? Like, what was happening?
Well, in Chicago, as far as like hip hop, I mean, it's great now, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great now, but to me, like how New York has this golden era of like 80-something till like 2000 or whatever, it was probably 93 till like 2000-something here, you know?
Yeah.
What is like your favorite memory or favorite show or, I don't know?
I don't know. There's so,
so many.
I've been in too many studio sessions and
that are like
trips.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, just going to New York, like the first time I went to New York, like Big Pun and Big L, just walking around like nothing. And
that's crazy.
Just like, you know, so well, I don't know. You know,
what was the reception? Because, you know, I mean, from my vantage point, I'm just a kid in the city who was at your shows and, you know, listening to the records. What was the reception outside of the city for your music?
See, it was great. It was great because we didn't know we were getting around, you know. But once the internet came out, we really started figuring out how things were really getting out, you know. And to hear kids from all over the world still talk about those instrumentals and different little things like that, it's crazy to me.
Were you putting them on MySpace or something? Or
on any space. As soon as the internet came out, it was AOL, MySpace, Facebook, you know, whatever was out there. But yeah, they would be on LimeWire or whatever. Napster.
Napster, LimeWire.
As soon as the internet started coming out, like, things would just pop up.
But how did you get like hip to the internet, you know?
Just like anybody else. Like the first thing that I can remember about the internet was AOL. You know, the chat rooms.
So, all right. Well, so as a producer, how did you get started with that? How did you get started sampling, or even did you have a four track? How did that begin for you?
Well, when we first started, there was this guy. He was a moment. He had the equipment, like the MPC. But me and this guy, Juan, were the record guys. So I was really into digging. So I knew the samples. And it's just wanting to make beats, you know, just loving the music. I just started picking up on stuff right away. You know, I was just spending hours and days. Like, you wouldn't be able to leave me away from those places.
But did you?
I mean, right now you can't leave me away.
Right? Yeah. No. Did you have a lot of music coming up when you were a kid in the crib?
Oh yeah, yeah. My brothers, they're way older than me, so I used to remember just listening to Earth, Wind, and Fire, Marvin Gaye, stuff like that. Then I lived in Mexico for 2 years, and my sister used to listen to a lot of stuff from the '80s there. So I just like remember, and it's funny because then later I started sampling that stuff, and I started figuring about a lot of international stuff. So, you know, we're pretty early as far as sampling international. It's a big thing now, but we're doing it back then.
And what do your folks do?
They're retired now. But my dad, he was like an auto body and fender guy. So he fixed collision cars that were like crashed up, and he painted them and did a lot of stuff with that.
And mom's was a...
My mom, she worked everywhere, hospitals and different things.
Yeah. And you come from a big family?
Five people.
Okay. Five. I know your younger brother.
Yeah.
Right, who could rhyme.
Mm-hmm.
For real. Salutes to him.
And then my other brother, he's like a carpenter. And then my other brother, he went to the army, and he was a mechanic.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so being a Northside kid, of course, I mean, depending on who you talk to, right? Some of the first places that hip-hop made its way in the city was the Northside, Logan Square, and other spots on the Northside. But still, kids didn't really travel that much before house and hip hop in the city.
Yeah.
So that was a gateway to rest of the city for so many young people.
Yeah.
You began to know people from everywhere. And that Chi Rock Nation was an opportunity or a space to kind of connect people from all the sides to do what?
Yeah. Well, they would eventually throw shows at this place by High Park, the university right there. It's a place called the Blue Gargoyle. And everybody used to go there. And I remember one time, Vac Hill, he was part of this crew of like really good rappers. And then they were initiating this guy. They was right outside the show, and we're looking at it. I'm just looking at this initiation. They're saying, spit this rhyme or whatever. End up being Twisted. So I end up. Things did that, you know, things like that. I was like, wow, you know, I saw that.
Right. Who are some of the names that we leave out of history? You know, some of the rappers, producers, organizers, promoters that, you know, we don't carry with us into this moment.
I think it's just the people are still here. It needs to be like recorded, you know, and put, and then so it can never go away.
Yeah.
You know? I think that's the main thing. I think maybe the younger generation won't know about it if nobody's there to tell it, So
and Sean, you've been a part of the Midway documentary series.
Yeah, salutes
to those guys who are doing a lot of that work of archiving and making sure that this story is told broadly.
Yeah, people like that. We need to have more people like that, just so we could always know. Because New York, they know that, and in L.A. and different places of the country, they know that. So we need to, you know, keep that going.
So you guys, at some point though, you guys started to travel, right?
Yes.
Where are some of your favorite places you've been with music?
I mean, New York and West Coast.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Same love on the West Coast.
Actually, we got our first big break on the West Coast because of the Beat Junkies and Peanut Butter Wolf. They were the first ones to give us love. And that's how we were able to expand, because once we started doing well on the West Coast with the Beat Junkies and people like Peanut Butter Wolf showing support, Fat Beats was in New York, and they would reject us a lot. So until we came up from the West Coast, then New York's like, oh, what's up? We heard your new record. What's going on? Freestyle or written, you know? But before that, we had put Taste of Chicago and Buried Alive, whatever, and nobody was... The East Coast wasn't trying to hear us because they were kind of like, you know, we're
snobs.
East Coast.
Yeah, right.
Know?
Yeah, yeah. To their detriment, really. I mean, even now we see, you know, the East Coast, you know, like rap scene suffers from some of that isolationism that it has engendered.
It would suck because I came up, I'm a big East Coast rap fan. Yeah. So be rejected by people that I thought would instantly like it because that's what I came up with. So it was really the West Coast, but... It came around full circle. It didn't matter.
And, of course, you've stayed making, right? I mean, even like so, I mean, to kind of fast forward even to now, I mean, what are some of the things that you're currently at work on?
Well, the thing is that when I lived in Dallas, I got kind of bored. So one of the most obvious things that I wanted to do was learn music theory and picking up some instruments and learning them. So that's what I spent most of my time there doing. And nowadays, I incorporate a lot of that into the music that I make. Because a lot of people use instruments, but it really won't sound like a hip-hop beat. They'll be like, But since I know how that's supposed to be mixed a little better, you know.
And, of course, the laws have changed drastically.
Yes,
and
that helps.
Because music has been digitized, you could also, you know, like companies can scour a, you know, minute sample and get at you. So to play your own instruments and then chop and sample yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I put up my stuff on YouTube. I get, hey, wait, it's my stuff. What are you talking about?
right. What did you learn how to play?
The bass, I went to take lessons. But guitar, I was like, I would just buy a guitar. I started learning that myself. And but those are the two main things. And then just general theory, you know.
Self-taught?
The theory, and electric guitar. But the bass, when I went to... Learn bass. This is this guy that he was playing bass as he was 12, and he was like 37 at that point. And it's like he just humbled me, you know, because I'm like, you know, a lot of people panic, whatever. But this guy taught me that you never stop learning, and there's still many things you got to learn. So,
when
that's the beautiful part to me is that you never stop learning anything.
Yeah.
You should always be like that. So, it doesn't matter what goes on. I'm always learning something.
And are you working on records? Are you working with different artists? Where does that production live now? Or what is some of the spaces it will live in the future?
Well, I mean, even without thinking about it, I did a whole album with Cap D, and he's putting it out in a couple months or weeks or whatever.
Wow.
It's on him. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's coming out. I know that for sure.
That's exciting.
Yeah, but I didn't even realize I did it, you know, because I was just...
You were just sending them...
Because every day I'm working on something, but it just... I just make something and I... Whatever.
Yeah.
And work on something else.
Sure.
So that's what happens, but...
Of course, Cap D, a.k.a. David Kelly.
Yeah.
Who is the... He holds...
Golden Stage Warriors legal counsel.
Yeah.
That's the perfect word.
Shit. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Also one of the best rappers in the history of Chicago.
Yeah.
So that's dope. That'll be an exciting project.
It's really good. It came out really good. Nice. I'm really happy with what he did with it.
When you were in Dallas, if you were paying attention, which I imagine you were, when you were away, Chicago had you know, this rising moment of this new generation in its music scene. How did you feel about that moment being away as you were?
Well, I kind of felt like sad because I feel like that's me. I'm supposed to be there. But also, it was cool. I mean, seeing the logical progression. I mean, things move on, things grow. So, but it's dope seeing that. Now being here, it's great.
And who are some of the artists now that you are excited about, that you maybe even want to work with? Or
there's so many, you know, but obviously I like Brittany Carter. I like, and there's so many people. I kind of miss some names.
Sure.
But believe me, there's a lot of people that I hear that I like. And you see, the thing about me, even though I'm an old head, like I came up with the older rap stuff, like, I listen to everything, to like the most modern stuff and the most stuff that I'm not supposed to be listening to. I listen to whatever I want.
Right.
I have no rules when it comes to anything that I do.
At least you're not one of those like bitter you know, older heads.
See, I listen to Post Malone, I listen to Drake, I listen to whoever I want. Whenever I'll go back and I'll listen to Run DMC because that's what I feel like that day or that second, you know? I'll do what I want.
Well, I think that's smart. I think that I think that conservatism from our generation is a problem. I think it holds us back, you know, with progressing, with staying relevant. And also, it's like, how do you have a conversation with the new generation if you're not fluid in what it is they are listening to or talking about?
Yeah. See, because when I first started, like, well, even to this point, when I was looking for records to sample, when I was really sampling a lot, I would sample Polish records. I would sample Japanese records, rock records, soul records, gospel records, jazz records, whatever. So that's the mentality that I have. And it's not just with music. It's what I want to eat. Sometimes I might want to eat sushi. Or I might want to eat a Polish or whatever. Or whatever.
Yeah.
South American music. I mean, you see, music or food.
Rap is just such a progressive, you know, genre that it just seems kind of besides the point to hate. I mean, there are people I don't like too, but you know.
Of course.
Yeah.
But to just shit on a new generation. I mean, that's kind of
and
the
it's a chameleon. Like, hip hop's a chameleon, you know? Like,
Yeah,
it's ever evolving and changing, so.
Yeah. And you could all, I mean, you know, like food, I guess, you could always find something that you're going to enjoy.
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
It's I mean, there's still young kids making, like, boom bat.
Absolutely.
You know, so.
And it's so exciting to see
things
cycle too. Yes. And I mean, because there's, you know, so much music that's happening right now. You know, to me, it reminds me of some of what you all were doing then as well, you know, which is exciting.
Yeah.
That progression kind of never stops. I mean, that it's the nature of the culture for it to always kind of look for what is new and fresh, but also have a firm foothold in history. That's the brilliance of the culture, right? Is that it's digging in the historical record, the sonic record, and then also forging ahead to, you know, reconfigure something that is ultimately fresh and maybe unseen in that particular way.
Yeah.
So you're back. I mean, are you going to work with younger artists or?
Yeah. You know, I just came here.
Yeah.
I still feel myself like it was a week ago since I've been here.
Right.
Even though it's been like 6-7 months, but, I'm settling down in so many ways, you know, mentally, physically, financially, artistically, whatever, you know, spiritually, whatever you want. So yeah, but eventually I'm going to get to different things. You know, I'm already getting on some things.
And is that you personally, or will the moment as a unit, as a crew, as a collective resurface?
We're going to resurface as a whole unit, you know, but I'm like the little spark, so
yeah,
I'm the motivator. Eventually everything will come together.
That's really exciting.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, man. And where's a good place for people to hear you? Of course, you could stream it and everything, but where are some of the best places to hear the music?
I think anywhere, really. We're everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Spotify, YouTube, whatever.
And you...
Pandora.
You on Instagram, where's a good place for people to be in tune with what you're doing?
With what I'm doing, Panic of the Moment at IG. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But if you hit Google and you just hit Panic Moment,
it'll get to you.
Everything will pop
Panic
up.
With a K.
Yeah. Yeah, because even my friends, my closest friends that I've worked with, they still spell it with a C.
Yeah. Well, how'd you get that name?
Vakil.
Oh yeah,
told you Vakil. Because he had my name as Hispanic.
Right.
So I just cut.
Yeah, that makes sense, and it's less racist that way, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I can't be racist because I found out I'm everything.
Are you?
Yeah. Did I you looked at my mom's dad's DNA things.
Yeah. Well, it's everything.
I'm everything. I'm Jewish. I'm African. I'm Italian. I'm Spanish. I'm Indian. I'm European.
Listen.
Whatever.
Have you had a bar mitzvah?
Even Irish, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah. So.
You're a Chicagoan. I guess that's what that means, really.
It makes total sense.
It really does. Yeah. I really could have this conversation. I want to have this conversation forever. But I will say that it would be refreshing to see the Chi-Rock shows return. And it's you're always a welcome guest here.
Thank you.
And whenever, you know, you individually or as a crew, you guys have something coming out, please let us know.
Sure,
you know, we'd love
you.
to have space and be able to listen and keep people in tune with what y'all doing. It really is an honor to have you here and just grateful for you, now and your return to the music and historically. It meant a lot to me personally that you guys were putting on for the city and putting on for the culture and letting so many other people in. So thank you, man. Appreciate you.
You guys are doing a great job here, too.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Man. Appreciate you.
Thank you for having me.
We want to thank our super producer, DJ Cashera.
WDN boss man, Todd Manley.
Shout out Ernie the engineer.
And of course, Max the snack tour.
All day. On IG and Twitter, we are
Cornerstore_pod.
Please, y'all, rate and subscribe on iTunes. Tell someone to listen to the Corner Store. And if you wish, you could also tell us who we should have on the Corner Store.
Yeah, just so you know, slide in our DMs.
They're open.
A great way to support us is through our Patreon account. It's patreon.com/cornerstore_pod. And you can, you know, support us in our future endeavors and, you know, get some benefits along the way. And
it's like the little change jar, like,
yeah,
you know, in front,
little,
like at the corner store.
Jar, right?
Yeah, right. If you listen, please support. And we really appreciate your support.
Thanks.
The Corner Store is brought to you by Stolen Spirits.